Matt attempted a casual chuckle, but it came out hollow and forced.
"Oh no, not at all," he said. "I should have told you the whole story."
He lowered his voice, confiding.
"Those earrings were actually a surprise gift."
"Ah," Narwood said, cutting him off with a knowing smile. "Not another word. My bad." Matt hesitated. Without further elaboration, his new revised story made no sense. Why the pointless lie? How had these imaginary earrings ended up on Narwood's driveway, all that? But Narwood either didn't need to hear more or didn't believe him and didn't want to hear more. Matt's spidey sense was tingling again. Laura and Kate were laughing and talking a mile a minute. Laura was saying something about Neiman Marcus, Kate nodding emphatically and saying,
"Totally, totally."
Instead of trying to salvage a shred of credibility, Matt decided to change the subject. "So how do you like ADS?" Narwood stared at him blankly.
"ADS?
Andromeda Data Systems. You don't work there?" Now he wondered whether Kate might have just heard wrong.
"Oh, right,"
Narwood said, as if just now remembering.
"I'm fine. You know, it's a job."
"Uh-huh," Matt said. Maybe it was Narwood's turn to get caught in a lie. "You just started there, right?"
Right,
Narwood said vaguely, obviously not eager to talk about it. "How's the commute?" Matt persisted, moving in for the kill. "You must, like, live on the turnpike."
"Not at all. It's not too bad."
There was no question about it. Narwood didn't work at ADS at all. He was probably afraid to be asked too many questions about the company. So Matt bore in.
"What kind of work do you do?"
"Oh, you don't want to know, believe me,"
Narwood said in an offhanded way. His eyes were roaming the room over Matt's shoulders as if he was desperate for an escape from the grilling.
"Not at all. I'd love to know."
"Believe me,"
Narwood said, feigning joviality, though there was something hard in his eyes.
"Whenever I try to explain what I do, people fall asleep standing up. Tell me about yourself."
"Me? I'm an engineer. But we're not done with you." Then Matt flashed a mollified grin.
"I guess you could say I'm an engineer, too,"
Narwood said. "A project engineer."
"Oh, yeah? I know a fair amount about ADS," Matt lied.
He knew nothing more than what he'd gleaned from a quick glance at their website this morning and skimming the occasional article in the Globe. "I'd love to hear all about it."
"I'm an independent contractor, on kind of a consulting project."
"Really?" Matt said, pretending to be fascinated. "Tell me about it." Narwood's restless eyes returned to Matt's and for a few seconds seemed to be studying him.
"I wish I could," he said at last, "but they made me sign all sorts of non-disclosure agreements."
Matt wondered whether Narwood was a harmless kingsnake or a venomous prairie rattlesnake.
"Huh,"
he said.
"It's just a short-term project anyway,"
Narwood went on, his eyes gone opaque.
"That's why we're renting."
Matt's stomach flipped over. A short-term project. That was one way of putting it. Of course it was short-term. In a couple of days, Narwood's true mission would be finished. Matt cleared his throat, attempted another approach entirely. "You know it's the weirdest thing, but you look so damned familiar."
"Oh?"
"I could swear I've met you before." Narwood nodded.
"I get that a lot."
Matt doubted it. "College, maybe?"
"I don't think so."
"Where'd you go to college?" Narwood seemed to hesitate.
"Madison," he said, almost grudgingly.
"You're kidding me. I've got a bunch of friends who went there. What year'd you graduate?" He caught Kate giving him a poisonous look. She had this astonishing ability to talk and eavesdrop at the same time. In truth, Matt didn't know a single person who'd gone to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. But if Matt could get Narwood to give him a year of graduation, he'd finally be able to unearth something on this guy. Narwood looked uncomfortable.
"I didn't really socialize much in college," he said. "I doubt I'd know any of your friends. Anyway, I didn't exactly graduate. Long story."
A taut laugh. "Love to hear it."
"But not a very interesting story. Maybe some other time."
I'll take a rain check, Matt said. We'd love to have you guys over sometime. What's your cell number? Of course, Matt had no intention of inviting the Narwoods over, not in a million years. But there had to be ways to trace a cell phone number.
I should have my new mobile phone in a day or two, Narwood said. Let me take yours.
Touché, Matt thought. He smiled like an idiot while he scrambled for a response. You know, it's funny, I'm blanking on it.
Is that your mobile phone right there, clipped to your belt?
Oh, Matt said, looking down, flushed with embarrassment.
Your number's easy to find on the phone. Here, let me take a look.
Narwood reached for Matt's phone, but Matt put his hand over it. Just then, Matt felt a painful pinch at his elbow.
Excuse us, Kate said. Matt, Audrey Kramer needs to ask you something.
Hope you find your earrings,
Narwood said with a wink that sent a chill down Matt's spine.
What the hell do you think you were doing in there?
Kate said on the walk home. Matt, embarrassed, snorted softly and shook his head.
I don't believe you.
What?
The way you were interrogating him? That was out and out rude.
I was just making conversation.
Please, Matt, I know damned well what you were doing. You might as well have put him under the Klieg lights. That was way out of line.
You notice how he was evading my questions?
Fine, so let it drop.
Don't you get it? Don't you get how dangerous this guy might be?
Oh, for God's sake, Matt. You're doing that rear window thing again. Laura seems perfectly nice.
There you go. Perfectly nice. Like that milk that's about to go bad.
The milk is fine,
she snapped.
And I'm not even going to ask what you were doing in front of their house at 5 in the morning.
A moment passed. The scuff of their footsteps on the pavement. You still haven't heard back from the doctor, have you?
Will you please stop asking?
But what's taking him so long?
Matt, we've been through this 3 times before.
I know, he said softly.
And we always come through just fine.
There's always the first time.
God, you're such a worrier.
Better safe than sorry. I worry for both of us.
I know,
she said, and she linked arms with him and snuggled close.
I know you do.
The next morning, as Matt was backing the Escalade out of the garage, he glanced over and saw Narwood getting into his tiny Toyota, and another idea came to him. Halfway down the driveway, he stopped the car. For a minute or so, he just sat there, enjoying the muted throb of the 6.2-liter all-aluminum V8 engine with its 403 horsepower and its 517 foot-pounds of torque. He watched Narwood back his crappy, holier-than-thou subcompact out into the street with a toy-like whine and then proceed down Ballard to Center Street. James Narwood was going to work, and Matt Parker was going to follow. Let's see where you really work, whoever you really are. He called his manager, Regina, and told her he was having car trouble and would probably be a little late. She sounded mildly annoyed, but that was her default mode. Matt kept his Escalade a few cars behind Narwood's Yaris, so Narwood wouldn't notice. At the end of Center Street, Narwood signaled for a right. No traffic light here, just a stop sign, and the morning rush hour was heavy. By the time Matt was able to turn, Narwood was in the far left lane, almost out of sight, signaling left. That was the way to the Mass Pike westbound, the direction of Hopkinton and ADS headquarters. Maybe he really did work there after all. Matt followed him around the curve, but then Narwood abruptly veered into the right lane, onto Washington Street, which made no sense at all. This was a local road. Where was the man going? When Narwood turned into a gas station, Matt smiled to himself. Even those damned gas-sipping toy cars needed to fill up from time to time. Matt drove on past the gas station, he couldn't exactly follow him in, and parked along the curb 50 feet or so ahead. Far enough away that Narwood wouldn't notice, but close enough to see him leave. But then Matt noticed something peculiar in his rearview mirror. Narwood didn't pull up to a gas pump. Instead, he parked alongside another car, a gleaming blue Ford Focus, not much bigger than his own. Then Narwood's car door opened. He got out, looked around quickly, then opened the passenger's side door of the blue Ford and got in.
Matt's heart began to thud. Who was Narwood meeting? The strong morning sun was reflected off the Ford's windows, turning them into mirrors, impossible to see in. Matt just watched for what seemed an eternity. It was probably no more than 5 minutes, as it turned out, before Narwood got out of the Ford, followed by the driver, a slender, black-haired young man in his 20s wearing khakis and a white shirt and blue tie. With crisp efficiency, the two men switched cars. Narwood was the first to leave, backing the Ford out of the space, then hanging a left out of the gas station onto Washington Street, back the way he'd come. Matt, facing the wrong way on Washington Street, didn't dare attempt a U-turn. Too much oncoming traffic. There was nowhere to turn left. Frantic, he pulled away from the curb without looking. A car swerved, horn blasting and brakes squealing. Just up ahead on the right was a Dunkin' Donuts. Matt turned into the lot, spun around, and circled back. But the blue Ford was gone. He cursed aloud. If only he had some idea which way Narwood was headed. West on the turnpike? East? Or maybe not the turnpike at all. Furious at himself, he gave up and proceeded toward the Mass Pike inbound. He'd surely lost the chance to flush the guy out. Tomorrow was the big day. In the morning, it would be too late. As he drove onto the ramp and merged with the clotted traffic on the pike, his mind raced. Why had Narwood switched cars? Why else except to elude detection, to avoid being spotted by someone who might recognize his vehicle? The inbound traffic was heavy and sluggish, worse than usual. Was there an accident? Construction? He switched on his radio in search of a traffic report.
According to a spokesman for the FBI's Boston office,
a female announcer was saying. Then a man's voice, a thick Boston accent.
You know, Kim, if I worked in one of those downtown buildings, I'd take a personal day. Call in a long weekend. Get an early start on my weekend golf game.
Matt switched the radio off. Just outside the city, the lines were long at the Alston/Brighton toll plaza, but not at the fast lane booths. Matt had never gotten one of those easy pass accounts, though. He didn't like the idea of putting a transponder on his windshield, an electronic dog tag. He didn't want Big Brother to know where he was at all times. Sometimes it amazed him how people gave up their right to privacy without a second thought. They just didn't think about how easily tyranny could move in to fill the vacuum. His brother Donnie back in Colorado, he understood. He was a true hero. As he glanced enviously over at the fast lane, he saw a bright blue car zipping past. The man behind the wheel had dark hair and a dark complexion. Narwood. He was quite sure of it. Miraculously, Matt had caught up with him on the highway, only to be on the verge of losing him again. Stuck in the slow lane with three cars ahead of him. The driver at the booth seemed to be chatting with the attendant, asking directions or whatever. Matt honked, tried to maneuver out of the line, but there was no room. Then he remembered that even if he'd been able to get over to one of the fast lanes, he couldn't just drive through without a transponder. A camera would take a picture of his license plate and send him a ticket, and that was exactly the kind of trouble he didn't need. By the time he handed the old guy a dollar bill and a quarter and cleared the booth, Narwood was gone. Matt accelerated, moved to the left-hand lane, and then, like some desert mirage, caught a glimpse of blue. Yes, there it was, not far ahead. Narwood's cerulean blue Ford was easy to spot because it was weaving deftly in and out of traffic, crazy fast, like Dale Earnhardt at Daytona, as if he were trying to shake a tail. Matt's Escalade had far more cojones than Narwood's silly little Ford. It could do 0 to 60 in 6.5, and its passing power wasn't too shabby either. But he had to be careful. Better to stay back, not draw Narwood's attention. Or get pulled over by the cops. Now that would be ironic. Just up ahead were the downtown exits. Matt normally took the first one, the Copley Square exit. He wondered, the thought dawned on him with a dread that seeped cold into the pit of his stomach, whether Narwood was headed toward one of the city's skyscrapers to conduct surveillance, as these guys so often did when a terrorist operation was in the works. Maybe even the Hancock. Dear God, he thought, not that. Of all buildings in Boston, not that. Let Kate scoff at his paranoia. She wouldn't be scoffing when he flushed out this Narwood, this man with a fake name and a contrived background and all his tricky driving maneuvers. When Narwood passed the Copley exit, Matt sighed aloud. Then, still changing lanes, speeding faster and faster, Narwood passed the South Station exit, too. Where, then, was he going? Suddenly, the blue Ford cut clear across three lanes of traffic and barreled onto an exit ramp. Matt was barely able to make the exit himself. And when he saw the green exit sign with the white airplane symbol on it, he felt his mouth go dry. He hadn't seen Narwood load a suitcase into his car or any other travel bags. The man was going to the airport, but without a suitcase. Matt's cell phone rang, but he ignored it. No doubt the officious Regina calling from work with some pointless question. As the blue Ford emerged from the Callahan Tunnel a few car lengths ahead of Matt's Escalade, it veered off to the right, to the exit marked Logan International Airport. Narwood passed the turnoffs for the first few terminals, staying on the perimeter road, then took the turnoff for central parking. Now Matt was right behind him, living dangerously. If Narwood happened to look in his rearview mirror, he'd see Matt's Escalade. No reason for Narwood to suspect it was Matt. Unless, waiting in line to enter the garage, he glanced back. So at the last minute, Matt swung his car away from the garage entrance and off to the side, letting Narwood go on ahead. He watched the man's arm snake out, a charcoal gray sleeve and dark-complexioned hand, the hairy wrist and the expensive watch, and snatched the ticket. Then Matt followed him inside. He took the ticket, watched the liftgate rise. The ramp just ahead rose steeply, a 15% gradient, he calculated. Narwood's blue Ford, once again, was gone. Chill, Matt told himself. He's only going one way. You'll catch up to him. Or see his parked car. But as he wound steadily uphill, tires squealing on the glazed concrete surface, Matt saw no blue Ford. He marveled at the lousy design of this parking structure, all the wasted space under the grade ramps, the curtain walls and the horizontally disposed beams, the petrified forest of vertical columns taking up far too many bays. When he saw how enormous the garage was, how many possible routes Narwood could have taken on each deck, he cursed himself for not taking the risk of staying right behind the guy. Now it was too late. How many times had he lost Narwood this morning? Half an hour later, having circled and circled the garage, up to the roof and back again, he finally gave up. Matt slammed his fist on the steering wheel, accidentally hitting the horn, and the guy right in front of him at the exit, driving a Hummer, stuck out his tattooed arm and gave him the finger. For the rest of the day, Matt could barely concentrate on his RFP. Who cared about it anyway, with what was about to happen? At lunch, he dodged an invitation from Lenny Baxter, the IT guy, to grab a sandwich at the deli, preferring to go off by himself and think. As he finished his turkey club sandwich at Subway, crumpling the wrapper into a neat ball, his cell phone rang. It was Kate.
"The doctor called," she said.
"Finally. Tell me." His heart started racing again, but he managed to sound calm.
"We're fine," she said.
"Great. That's great news. So how are you feeling?"
"You know me. I never worry."
"You don't have to," Matt said. "I do it for you." Back at his cubicle, he found the website for the University of Wisconsin's Office of the Registrar. A line said, "To verify a degree or dates of attendance," and gave a number which he called. "I need to verify," Matt deliberately used the word in order to sound official, "attendance of a job applicant, please."
"Of course," the young woman said. "Can I have the name?"
Matt was surprised at how easy this was going to be. He gave Narwood's name, heard the girl tap at her keyboard.
"All righty,"
she said, all corn-fed Midwestern hospitality.
"So you should get a degree verification letter in 2 to 3 business days. I'll just need to get..."
"Days?" Matt croaked. I don't have time for that."
"If you need an immediate answer, you can contact the National Student Clearinghouse, assuming you have an account with them, sir."
We're just a small office here, and the hiring deadline is today, or it's not going to go through, so if there's any way..."
Oh,
the woman said, full of genuine-sounding concern.
Well, let me see what I can do for you then. Can you hold?
She came back on the line a couple of minutes later.
I'm sorry, sir. I don't have a James Narrowood. I'm not finding any Narrowoods. Are you sure you've got the spelling right?
At 6:45 p.m., Matt pulled into his driveway and noticed the blue Ford Focus parked next door. So Narrowood was home, too. Turning his key in the front door, he realized it was already unlocked. He moved slowly, warily through the living room, nerves a-jangle, listening, pulse racing. He thought he heard a female cry from somewhere in the house, though he wasn't sure whether it was Kate's or whether it was in fact a laugh or a cry. And then the hollow core door to the basement came open, the one between the kitchen and the half-bath, and James Narrowood loomed in the doorway, a 20-pound sledgehammer in his hand. Matt dove at Narrowood and tackled him to the floor. He could smell the man's strong aftershave tinged with acrid sweat. He was surprised at how easily Narrowood went down. The sledgehammer slid from his grip, thudding onto the carpet. The guy barely put up a fight. He was trying to say something, but Matt grabbed his throat and squeezed it just below the larynx. Matt snarled.
You goddamned!
A shout came from somewhere close. Kate's voice, high and shrill.
Oh my God! Matt, stop it! Oh my God, Jimmy, I'm so sorry!
Confused and disoriented, Matt relaxed his grip on Narwood's throat and said,
What the hell's going on here?
Matt, get off him!
Kate shrieked. Narrowood's olive-complexioned face had gone a shade of purple. Then, unexpectedly, he laughed.
What you must have thought,
Narrowood managed to choke out.
I'm so sorry. Your wife told me to just go down and grab. All my tools are in storage.
He struggled, was finally able to sit up.
Laura's been nagging me for days to put up a fence around her tomato garden to keep out the chipmunks. And I didn't realize how much clay's in the soil here. You can't pound in the stakes without a decent sledgehammer.
Matt turned around, looked at Kate. She looked mortified.
Jimmy, it's all my fault. Matt's been on edge recently.
Now Laura Narrowood was there too, ice clinking festively in a tumbler of scotch.
What's going on here? Jimmy, you okay?
Narrowood rose unsteadily, brushed off his suit jacket and pants.
I'm fine, he said.
What happened?
His wife said.
Was it the vertigo again?
No. Narrowood chuckled. Just a misunderstanding.
Sorry, Matt mumbled. Should have asked before I jumped you.
No, really, it's all my fault,
Kate said later as they sat in the living room, drinks in their hands. Kate had heated up some frozen cheesy puff pastry things from Trader Joe's and kept passing around the tray.
Matt, I probably should have told you I'd invited them over, but I just saw Laura in her backyard planting out her tomatoes, and we started talking, and it turns out Laura's into heirloom tomatoes, which you know how much I love. And I was telling her that I thought it was probably too early to plant out her tomatoes around here. She should wait for last frost. And then Jimmy got home, and he asked if we had a sledgehammer he could borrow, so I just asked these guys over for a drink.
My bad,
Matt said, still embarrassed about how he'd overreacted. But it didn't mean his underlying suspicions had been wrong. Not at all. Just in this one particular instance. Nothing else about the man had changed. None of his lies about his job or his college or what he was really doing.
Tomorrow we'll all laugh about it,
Kate said.
I doubt that, Matt thought. What do you mean?
Said Narwood. I'm laughing now. He turned to his wife, put his big ham-hock hand over hers.
Just please don't ask our neighbors for a cup of sugar. I don't think I'm up to it.
He laughed loud and long, and the women joined him. Matt smiled thinly.
I was telling the ladies about my day from hell, Narwood said. So my sister Nabila calls me last night to tell me she has a job interview in Boston and she's flying in this morning.
Nothing like advance notice,
said Laura. Narwood shrugged.
This is my baby sister we're talking about. She does everything last minute. She graduated from college last May and she's been looking for a job for months and all of a sudden it's rush, rush, rush.
and she asks, can I pick her up at the airport?
God forbid she should take a cab,
Laura said.
What is an older brother for? Narwood said.
Nabila is what you'd call a princess,
said his wife.
Really, I don't mind at all, said Narwood. But of course it had to be on the same day that my car is going into the shop.
I think she planned it that way,
Laura said.
But the car dealership couldn't have been nicer about it. They were even willing to bring the loaner to a gas station on Washington Street. But I got a late start leaving the house, and then the kid had all kinds of paperwork he wanted me to fill out, even though I thought we'd gone over all of this on the phone. So there I am on the highway in this rented car, driving to the airport like a madman. Only I don't know where the turn signal is, and come to find out the parking brake is partly on, so the car's moving all jerky like a jackrabbit. And I don't want to be late for Nabila because I know she'll freak out.
God forbid she might have to wait a couple of minutes for her chauffeur,
Laura said acidly.
So right when I'm driving into the parking garage at Logan, my cell phone rings, and who should it be but Nabila? She got an earlier flight, and she's been waiting at the airport for half an hour already, and she's freaking out, she's going to be late for the interview, and where am I, and all of this.
Laura Narwood shook her head, compressed her lips. Her dislike for her sister-in-law was palpable.
But I've already taken the ticket from the garage thingy, so I turn around and I have to plead with the man in the booth to let me out without paying their minimum.
What was it, like $10, Jimmy?
Said his wife.
You should have just paid.
I don't like throwing away money, Narwood replied. You know that. So I race over to Terminal C and I park right in front of the arrivals and get out of the car, and all of a sudden this state trooper's coming at me, yelling and writing me a ticket. He says I'm not allowed to park in front of the terminal, like I've got a car bomb or something, in this little rented Ford.
You do look Arab,
his wife said.
And these days?
Persians are not Arabs, Narwood said stiffly. I speak Farsi, not Arabic.
And I'm sure that Boston cop appreciates the distinction,
Laura said. She looked at Matt and shrugged apologetically.
Jimmy hates cops.
Annoyed, Narwood shook his head.
So as soon as I get back in the car to move it, Nabila comes out with like 5 suitcases and she's not even staying overnight. So I race downtown to Fidelity and then I have to floor it to get to Westwood because my 11 a.m. got moved up an hour.
Don't tell me you got a speeding ticket,
Laura said.
When it rains, it pours, Narwood said.
Westwood? Matt said. You told me you work for ADS. They're in Hopkinton.
Well, if you want to get technical about it, I actually work for Datavis, which is a subsidiary of ADS. They just got acquired by ADS 6 months ago. And let me tell you, this isn't going to be an easy integration. They still haven't changed the name on the building, and they still answer the phone Datavis instead of ADS.
Huh, Matt said. And your sister, did she go to UW too?
UW, Narwood said.
Didn't you tell me you went to Madison? Matt said. He added dryly, maybe I misheard.
Ah, yes, yes, Narwood said. James Madison University, JMU.
JMU, Matt repeated. Huh.
That happens a lot, Narwood said. Not Wisconsin, Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Then that would explain why the University of Wisconsin had no record of any James Narwood, Matt thought. Huh, he said.
And no, Nabila went to Tulane, said Narwood. I guess we Nauris feel more comfortable in those southern colleges. Maybe it's the warmer climate.
Nauris?
I married a feminist, Narwood said.
I'm confused, Matt said.
Laura didn't want to take my name, Nauri.
Why should I?
His wife put in.
I mean, how archaic is that? I was Laura Wood my whole life until we got married. Why shouldn't he change his name to James Wood?
And neither one of us likes hyphenated names, Narwood said.
This girlfriend of mine named Janice Ritter,
Laura said,
married a guy named Steve Hyman, and they merged their names and got Ryman.
That sounds a lot closer to Hyman than to Ritter, Kate said.
And the mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villar, married Corina Raygosa, Narwood said, and they both became Villa Raygosa.
That's brilliant, Kate said. Nauri and Wood become Narwood. like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie become Brangelina.
Nowry, Matt thought. Even if he had gone to the University of Wisconsin, they wouldn't have had a record of a Nowerwood.
Well, but that's just the tabloid nickname for them, Nowerwood objected. They didn't change their names legally.
Neither did we,
Laura Nowerwood said.
When you give me a son, we will, her husband said.
Give you a son?
His wife blurted out.
You mean when we have a child? If we have a child, I got news for you, Jimmy. You're not back in the old country. You've never even been to the old country.
Early the next morning, Matt was glugging the almost spoiled milk down the sink drain when Kate entered the kitchen.
Hey, what are you doing? That's perfectly good milk.
It tastes sort of suspicious to me, Matt said.
Now you're getting paranoid about dairy products?
Paranoid?
He turned to face her, speaking slowly.
What if I'd been right about them?
But you weren't, you big goofball.
Okay, fine, Matt said. We know that now. It's just that I couldn't quite shake the feeling that they were...
Undercover FBI agents?
They just had that vibe. And when I think about Donnie doing 5 consecutive life sentences and Supermax back in Colorado just because he dared to fight for freedom on our native soil, you know, I just get the willies sometimes.
Man, you're always jumping at shadows.
She handed him a small red plastic gadget.
Here's the LPD detonator the doctor sent over. I told you he'd come through.
I hope the doctor is absolutely certain this one's going to work. Remember Cleveland?
That won't happen again, she said. The doctor wasn't running that operation. If there's one thing the doctor knows, it's explosives.
What about the RDX?
The Escalade's already packed.
Sweetie, Matt said, and gave her a kiss. How early did you get up?
Least I could do. You've got a long day ahead of you. You're taking the Stewart Street entrance, right?
Of course, he said. All 4 of us are. No CCTV camera there.
So we'll meet up in Sayreville tonight, Kate said.
As planned.
We're going to be Robert and Angela Rosenheim.
That sounds almost like one of those blended names, Matt said.
It's what the doctor gave us. We'd better get used to saying it. Okay, Robert?
Bob. No, let's make it Rob. Are you Angela or Angie?
Angie's okay.
Okay. He paused. But what if I had been right about the neighbors? Because one of these times I'm going to be. You know that.
Well,
Kate said almost sheepishly,
I did take the precaution of letting the air out of their tires.